Okay, witches, That Witch Life's third annual mini-con is just around the corner on Saturday, April 6th. Tickets are still available, but they're going fast. This is a virtual conference, and this year we are focusing the entire mini-con on the magic of astrology. Come join us for workshops about using astrology to improve your magic and your life. Hillary, Kanani, and I will be presenting workshops, plus there will be a special class by astrologer Michael A. Bryan and a masterclass with renowned astrologer and author Ivo Dominguez Jr. Topics include empowering your witchcraft with astrology, mastering traditional astrology, astrology for artists, moon magic, and healing with the star goddess. If you can't make it live, everything will be recorded and sent to ticket holders after the event. Get your tickets for the April 6th That Witch Life Minicon, The Magic of Astrology, now at thatwitchlife.com. Get it, witches!
Hey, witches, Llewellyn has a book out that we wanted to make sure you knew all about. It is called Houseplant Horticulture by Devin Hunter. It talks about infusing magic into every act of indoor plant care. No plant is ever just a houseplant. Whether you're a green witch or merely horticurious, you can learn how to successfully grow potted plants, connect with their spiritual energies, and partner with them for magic. Houseplant Horticulture also includes a foreword by Juliet Diaz, author of Plant Witchery, and illustrations by Ciolo Thompson, creator of the Hedgewick Botanical Oracle. So grab your gardening gloves and save 20% on Houseplant Horticulture by Devin Hunter. Use coupon code HORT20 at Llewellyn.com. The coupon is valid from April 10th through April 30th. It is not valid in conjunction with other discounts or previously placed orders. Note that you do need to be logged into your Llewellyn account for the coupon code to apply. That's HORT20 at Llewellyn.com. Check it out.
The path of the witch is so
the gift of witchcraft.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies and spirits and communicating.
Creating magic.
Powerful ritual and powerful spells.
She's actually sending me in the cauldron.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Bless it be, yo. Bless it be. People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches.
They scattered to different parts of the world, following magic and spirit.
Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to That Witch Life Podcast. I'm your host today. I'm Courtney. Who are my co-hosts? Witches.
I'm Hillary.
You're Hillary.
Hillary.
And
I'm Kanani.
You have to say it like Hillary. You have to. I am Kanani.
Hillary is very tired. Hillary flew in.
Tired.
I flew in last night from a show in Denver or in Boulder, Colorado, and my flight was very delayed from a storm. So I'm running on like 3 hours of sleep and I'm a little delirious. So if I sound completely insane, or at least more insane than normal, there's a reason.
Absolutely no sympathy for you. And you want to know why?
Why?
Because you got to see Najah.
I did get to hug Najah Lightfoot, and it was the best thing ever.
Yeah, so you got to see and hug and have a meal with Najah. I will have no complaints from you at all whatsoever.
Fair.
And I'm also terrified. Kanani and I are looking more and more alike every single fucking time we get on a screen together. I like have deliberately started trying to do my makeup a little bit differently. And I come in and she's done it the same way. I'm like,
I have no makeup on, so I don't know how to help you.
I don't even know what to say. It's like getting creepier and creepier. We look more and more alike the time. It's single white witch female. True. Only neither one of us are trying. We're trying to be the opposite and we just keep meeting in the middle. I don't know. Anyway, Ree has a surprise for us.
Tell us about your surprise. So I'm really excited because I have a surprise by the name of Sipa Swan. So you guys probably heard me talk about Sipa before. Sipa and I have been friends since college. So we're really going like middle school, high school, college, here because you know, Courtney's known Kanani since middle school. I've known Courtney since high school, and I've known Sipa since college. So this is like a really blast from the past episode here. Sipa and I studied opera together. And I also have talked a lot about Sipa because Sipa was the magical life coach I worked with when I was doing work to get my house. So yes. I talked all about that as well. And so I just want to brag about Sipa for a minute because Sipa's rad, and then I'll explain why Sipa's here. So Sipa is a fairy godmother, a strongly Vesuvian and neurodivergent coach, astrologer, and psychic. She brings her previous work as an opera singer, birth doula, knitting instructor, and sundry other pursuits into her client sessions, as well as her ceaseless curiosity about the natural world and the human condition. Sipa's coaching is all about helping people access their inner magic, transcend trauma and societal expectations, and create the life they truly desire. By blending astrology, hypnosis, EFT tapping, and more, she guides her clients on a soul transformation journey, helping them break free from limiting patterns and embrace unique gifts. It's self-discovery meets personal development with a dash of magic. Secretly, her favorite work is being delighted, which fortunately happens whenever she meets a kindred spirit. Sipa lives nearish to Seattle with her partner, two stepdaughters, and a bonded pair of mostly well-behaved cats. We all know about mostly well-behaved animals here, by the way.
No, I don't know anything about well-behaved animals at all. Oh my God, that is the most endearing bio in the
world. I know, it's the best bio of all time, right?
Like, thank you. So sweet and professional and like, oh my God, I want to learn from you and hug you. It's just great.
That is exactly what I was trying to force you to do.
Well, you nailed it 100%. And so like the reason we have Sipa here, as you know, we have the mini con coming up. So when this episode airs, you will have just the last week of time to book tickets. So we are down to the wire and tickets are going fast. So we really, really want to get in there and get your tickets. But Sipa is going to be joining me for my class on astrology for the artist. So Sipa being an artist and an astrologer and having done so much work with me personally, but also we've worked on a lot of professional things together. I thought it would be really fun to be able to riff off of another opera singer, and also someone who honestly taught me so much about astrology as well. And I think Sipa's approach is so unique, kind of life coaching element and career coaching element to the magical element. And so, she's going to be joining for my class. So get your tickets. You don't want to fucking miss that for sure. But yeah, Sipa, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, just briefly about kind of your approach and why you're excited for this class.
Well, hi. First of all, thank you so much for having me here. I am so excited. I've been wanting to be on your podcast and just talk magic-y things with you three for many moons. ADHD and excitement.
No, it's okay. They deal with me all the time, so they're used to it.
So for the class, I don't remember if there was another question first. So the class, I'm really excited because, I think that the most fun way to use astrology or magic or, you know, hypnosis or anything is like where the rubber meets the road, like bringing it into your life so it actually does something for you. And so the prospect of using astrology to enhance ritual magic that actually makes a difference in your life and makes a difference in your spiritual connection, your spiritual processes is just very exciting to me.
It's just one more way to use astrology than just who you should date and who you should avoid.
Right.
Right.
Which
right.
is unfortunately how astrology tends to be
used. Like, yeah.
Yeah,
it's like 90% of astrology is that, right? Like from people's perspective, what they see out there is mostly like, oh, I read my horoscope in the paper, which is very basic.
I don't talk to Gemini.
Generalization. Yeah.
Or like Scorpios are bad or whatever. Like,
well, Scorpios, Scorpios lurk and Scorpios go they both revel in the fact that nobody wants to date them. And also they abhor the fact that no one wants to date them. And I suspect my Scorpio ex is listening. So to see if I'll mention him. And now I'm not talking about you.
I have more than one Scorpio ex myself. So understood.
Well, I'm a one and done with the Scorpio exes. I'm done.
But it's nice because Yeah, I think that we don't often get, you know, I think we get like, we often really get just a very, very surface glimpse at what astrology can be. And we also often think about it towards just like learning more about ourselves or like about our personal life. We don't, I think a lot of people miss the fact about your professional life or your just like your life in general, like not just like, again, who you date or who you don't date or, you know, what you should watch out for next month, but like,
yeah,
you know, how you can use that when you're thinking about signing contracts for if you're an artist or if you're developing a new show, when's the time to really dig into that creative process and what to pay attention to and not only avoid, but also what, for me, what has happening during that time period, what you can draw from strengths. Like if you know that something is going on astrologically, that it can, you can draw from as a strength. It's not just about what to avoid, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, okay. So two things came up while you were speaking. And the first one is, I hope I remember them both. The first one is just like, astrology is often presented to us as a thing that is happening out there that we cannot change. Like this, you know, this is how the planets are moving. This is what they're doing. And it feels like this is what they're doing to you. And even in terms of like more archetypal astrology or evolutionary astrology, it can feel like this is just the hand you're dealt and that's it. And now you can like deal with it and you can, you know, work around it, but there's not a sense that there's, or there's often not a sense that there's like something you can work with the placements on, with the planets, work with these, you know, astral bodies. And I just haven't found that that's true. Like the way I got into this was that, is it a cool for me to like,
yeah, please do.
We okay. So yeah. When I first started learning astrology, I had a friend who was, you know, like, oh, this was going on in your fourth house and blah, blah, blah. And it did not make any sense at all for a very long time. I was like, okay, what is a house? Okay. But what is a sign? Like it made no sense to me. And I finally was just like, okay, I'm going to break this down into their constituent parts. And if I just learn the planets, then maybe that'll help me understand the signs. And then something houses maybe will work. I don't know. So what I found was that I got to know the planets and they started becoming like people to me. Like, and I think that's, you know, like, goes back to the original idea of like the planets as gods, like as, you know, personified. And maybe I just tend to anthropomorphize things too much. That's highly possible, but it worked. It worked for me. And so I found like when I looked at a birth chart, all of a sudden, just like this switch flipped. And all of a sudden I would look at a birth chart and the planets would tell me things. Like I'm looking at the birth chart and it's like, oh, Mercury is trying to tell me something about Mars. And then Mars is like setting us up to go into this Jupiter, and Jupiter really wants this thing, and they're being helped by Uranus. And like it became this very personal story for each chart I looked at, depending on like what we were talking about. Like it was a conversation. And I really strongly feel, and again, this might just be because I am very Venusian. I have, I think, eight Venus ruled placements. But I just feel like there's this relationship there. There's this like actual supportive relationship. And I just don't think that any of the planets are trying to do stuff to us. I feel like they're, you know, caring teachers who want to help and also want the best for us. And they're not going to let us slack. And taking that approach has just made astrology feel very like practical and real and accessible for me and for my clients.
I really like that approach because, you know, I think that we often feel helpless. Oh, Mercury's in retrograde, so everything's just going to be shit.
Right.
Well, that's not necessarily true. Like
only some things will be shit. Probably you're fine.
Like, but like,
oh yeah, communication, transportation, right. Like sure. We're just hosed.
Yeah. We're, and I think that we forget that, like, you know, you could I know when I talked to you, I talked to you about a really dear friend, Lisa Jade, who came on and talked about eclipse magic and also talked a lot about magic around Mercury, right? And it's about like how you could, it's not like you just sit there helpless and you're like, okay, well, shit's going to just be shit.
Like, can't do anything. Could you set up an
offering? Could you set up an offering to Mercury to like give Mercury what Mercury needs in order to work with you as well? So it's like this, I really like the approach. I mean, I think that it's important to remember that we're not just like victims to whatever transits are happening planetarily in astrology at any given moment. And the power of knowing and understanding those things allows us to have some insight of what maybe we should be thinking about. If we know it's a time that there might be some trouble in this area, it's something we can think about in the choices we're making, but that doesn't mean that we can't do anything else beyond that. So it's like,
it's collaborative. Like it's, I think of it a little bit like, so I'm, you can hear from my voice is not like the happiest voice right now. I'm a recovering opera singer. But I remember going to auditions and just feeling terrified, you know, scrutinized, all these things. And then finally, I don't even remember who it was, but someone pointed out, we want you to do well at your audition. Like, we want you to be, like, we're trying to cast this role. We are not rooting against you. We're rooting for you. We want you to really crush this audition because we want to have the best person in our show. And it kind of feels like that. Like, the planets aren't against you. Like, even Saturn or, you know, Mars, who have these, you know, reputations as being malefic, like, they're not mad at you. They're not like these jerks in the sky who are just trying to like harsher mellow. They're like, listen, step up. This is like Mars is like saying, like, right, you have anger. You have anger. It's probably valid. Can we talk about it? Like, can we use it for something that, like, what do you want to fight for?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And Saturn's like, hey, are you setting boundaries? Are you honoring boundaries? Are you taking, like, are you being responsible? Like, I know you're better than this. And so we can have a really great relationship with all of the planets. I'm busy falling back in love with my malefics right now. That's like my project I'm working on, just being like, Mars and Saturn are like, I love you.
That sounds like the title of a beautiful memoir, Falling in Love with My Malefics.
I'll write that down. Thank
Please
you.
Write totally. That and go write your that, bo- that
your
memoir.
Your first book,
okay?
That's a perfect title.
Okay.
Forward by Kanani. Already in Love with Malefics by Kanani.
I love
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
But so, yeah, it's just there's so much more there than like the set of things. And then if we can add, I mean, people can add whatever tools they want. Like, some people want to add, you know, journaling or meditation or whatever. And like adding ritual magic to it is like, yes, like I would insert swears. I'm not, my stepdaughters are here, so I'm not going to swear today, but add as many swears as you can.
Just say it and I'll say it for you. Which one do you want?
Okay.
Fuck.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Like, do some ritual
magic. My job here is done.
Cast a spell, you know, like do the tools that speak to you, that resonate for you, and that, you know, embody your connection to the whatever is bigger than us, then use that. Do that. That's a great yes. And then how can I give you the astrology to enhance and deepen that and make it like just give you that extra oomph to give it, you know, to help it align with what the energy is doing right now. You know, you've got your own internal sense of what the energy is doing right now, which is, you know, always number one. We always want to center to self first. But then if I can bring astrology to bolster that and to validate you, like, I feel like that's so much of what I do is just being like, yeah, I look at a chart and I'm like, wow, Capricorn moon, I'm so sorry that you were parentified. Like, that's really rough for anybody. Or, you know, whatever placement somebody happens to have, like really being able to say, hey, you're not crazy. This was real. And then we can add these other tools to it. It just makes it so rich and it restores that sense of, so there's this word, Hillary, I know you'll know it, Gesamtkunstwerk.
Gesamtkunstwerk. Yep.
And it means total artwork. And Wagner used it, and Wagner is, he's all right. His music is better than it sounds, Mark Twain said, and I agree. But Before that, there was a wonderful man whose name I've forgotten who used it to mean like, how can we add all these aesthetic things together to get as close to God as possible? And like, that's the word he used, but we can, you know, enlarge the word to mean our experience of the divine. How many elements that are like this beautiful aesthetic experience can we add together to get as close to the divine as we can get? And like, what could be better than that?
That's very little. Very little.
A really good sandwich on a croissant.
Yeah.
Like a mutton lettuce.
I'm gonna say lightly toasted bagel.
Oh, very good. Like an everything bagel. Oh.
Yeah. Yes. An everything bagel. From a cart in New York City with bacon, egg, and cheese on it is awesome. Mm.
And breakfast sandwiches are the highest form of art.
I know. I never related more to a fictional character than when Harley Quinn was trying to kill everyone just so she could get back to her breakfast sandwich. Like, that was her super objective, was just to get back to her breakfast sandwich, and so she killed everybody in her way. And I'm like, I get it.
Yep.
Yeah, we're having a full moon in Libra. There's a lot of the Venus stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Feeling it.
It's real.
A full moon in Libra has been, and coupled with the fact that there's also a lunar eclipse, has been fucking with a lot of worlds lately.
It has.
And so I've been talking to people and everybody's like got some like either disastrous thing that's happened or some new thing that's happened. And I'm like, yep, that tracks.
Yeah, it's an intense one. And I think that it's, I mean, again, like talking about anger, you know, we have Aries so that we can see our anger and our like where our boundaries have been violated, where our individuality, where our personal needs and our personal desires have been violated. And we need to honor those. You know, like we're the North Node is in Aries. So it's like, okay, like we did diplomacy, but maybe we overdid it. And maybe like now we need to come back to that sense of self and that just that self agency and that self reclamation. Like it is the first sign of the zodiac. It's like coming back to self, you know, like I said, and that's a trauma, you know, a trauma healing thing. It's like you have to remember that your connection to yourself is the most important thing. It's not connection to other people. It's not connection to whatever you conceive of as divine. It's connecting to yourself. That is the most important work you have. And Aries is like really calling that up. And we're seeing how starkly we've, you know, been violated and violated ourselves in terms of our own selfhood.
I mean, I actually saw this because the sun is in Aries. And the moon, we just had the Libra full moon. And what's fun is I actually saw it was in an article and it said, for the full moon in Libra, it is a great time to figure out what is serving you well, figure out precisely what you want and need, and choose to be unapologetically selfish. Being real is better than being nice. And I thought, fuck yeah with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, between Libra, you know, kind of telling us wake up, focus, make shit real, and being in an Aries sun where Aries is like, you know, got all that, you know, fire in its belly anyway, and telling us to, you know, be confident and kind of let ourselves figure out what we want. I think, yeah, there's a lot of gumption happening right now. And I feel like there's a lot of, I'm not going to say, I think in some levels it's like wrongs being righted and people getting accolades for good works that they've done in the past. But there's also kind of these little hiccups that are happening in people's lives, which I don't really necessarily make sense now. But I feel like these are the kind of things that like a couple months from now are all of a sudden going to make sense. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, or like later like, in
the this is stupid. I don't understand this. And then all of a sudden, like a few weeks go by and you're like, oh, that's why that happened.
Okay, yeah. So I think that it was Stephen Forrest, who's an astrologer. I have a big, you know, educational crush on. He talks about Aries being a baby bird, where it's like this, and I think Hillary, this may have come up when you and I were working together, but this sense of like the baby bird is the weakest of creatures. Like it has no skills. It's barely a being. It is one of many, and it's, you know, its parents are not necessarily attached to its survival. And yet it's like, hey, feed me, take care of me. Here's what I need. And it's just
I stepped out for a second. Are we talking about men?
Actually, I was just wondering if she was talking about me. I was like, that sounds like me.
I actually think that's
what's on my pillow. Feed me, take care of me,
yeah.
Pay attention to me.
Yeah, it's so it's talking about familiar. Aries being a baby bird. It's like, and you can assign that label to any other creature you choose. But it is like
running around with its mouth open, making strange noises.
Yeah,
I've met some
also
guys
me,
like that.
Also me.
Yeah, and like, but it requires that courage and that, you know, it's very reckless. It can be very reckless.
This is all tracking. This is all and then when they don't give it to you or they stop giving it to you, you leave. See, this is all very, I've never compared myself to a baby bird before.
Okay.
So my entire life.
Can we just talk about some spring magic for a second? I don't even think that Kanani and Hillary know the story. So when I was a kid, I was probably 10 years old, and we had this tree that was right in our kitchen window. And it was kind of like a corner window. And so the tree wrapped around it. And a mother robin built her nest there, and me and my sister and my parents happened to be there when the babies hatched. And so we saw them get their first meal, and we saw dad come home with takeout. Like, the dad came home with this giant beak full of worms, and mom was like, great, okay. You know, so she starts chewing them up and feeding the babies. But I, you know, I had never seen anything like that since then. Of anything about like father robins having any interest in that. I'm like, listen, either this was a very large female and this was a lesbian couple, which is possible, or, you know, at least this dad was one who stuck around for a while. But yeah, so
yeah, anyway, that's amazing. I've only seen that on video. Like, I've never seen it in real life. It sounds incredible.
But yeah, big old fat worms. He had a whole mess of them. He's like, honey, I got it. I asked them for without pickles on this one. And she's like, but they put them on anyway. And she's like, I don't have time to get angry. Just help me. I've got four of them here.
I've never realized how bird-like I am. But I mean, yeah, feed me or I'll go away. I mean, that's...
Or I'll throw up in your mouth.
Exactly. I mean, these are your choices. Feed me, give me attention, or I'm out. Peace out. Like, I might have to have a newfound affinity for birds. I didn't even realize.
Yeah, 100%. Well, see, but I'm super grateful.
It does track, because I did love penguins. And penguins, they parent separately. So you never have to deal with the father, because he's off getting the food. Then when he comes back, you get a
leave. No wonder you've always loved the penguin.
And
no
penguins,
wonder.
And the men are off having gay sex. Like the male penguins, they go impregnate the females, or they go and have sex with men for fun. I think penguins are great.
Penguins are very progressive.
They're
way ahead of the curve.
Did anybody see that they finally caught, like some biologists finally caught two humpback whales having sex?
No.
And it turned out to be two male humpback whales.
No way.
Sex. Yes. This was very recently.
That's amazing.
I look forward to the time when we stop being surprised by that.
I know. Copulation. Oh, it's two males.
If that doesn't happen in nature, Courtney. Right.
It's an aberration.
Hey, it's what the humpback whales are learning in school. It's indoctrination.
It's not their fault. You named them humpback. What did you want from them?
Humpback Mountain.
Right? Like,
were they listening to your podcast?
Like, they were listening to our podcast.
And they got corrupted, right?
They got corrupted.
That's probably what it was.
By our propensity to make whales gay.
That's a power. That's a superpower. Can you imagine?
Just took her glasses off. She's done. She can't.
I'm like, I can't anymore.
She's like, we're making whales gay now.
I'm just going to take a nap. Somehow we're talking about gay humpback whales, and I don't understand what happened.
This is the real gay agenda. It's power over humpback whales.
It's power over humpback whales. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, someone needed to do it.
Yeah. Everybody talked. We decided that's the new.
Meanwhile, yeah. This is a view of what you may receive at TWL's the Magic of Astrology. There will probably be some kind of rabbit hole into the gay life of marine animals. You're welcome.
I'm going to have to work this into my workshop somehow.
Tickets are still available.
Act now.
Your title is called The Mini-Con. Moon Made Me Do It, Kanani.
The moon made me do it. Like, it's not your fault. The moon made me do it. Like, I mean,
gay and in the ocean. Okay.
This is going well.
All the things. It tracks. No, this full moon in Aries has been, or in Libra has been interesting, we'll say.
All right. Well, Sipa, where can people find you in addition to at the MiniCon next week?
I am the only Sipa. I'm the only Sipa Swan for sure. It's okay. T-S-I-P-A. So if you type T-S-I-P-A into any of the social media things.
There you are.
There I am. SipaSwan.com. Sometimes post there. I try to remember to post, but yeah. Anybody's welcome to reach out. We can talk about, you know, gay whales or astrology or
Astrology of gay whales.
Well, specifically that. It's the perfect confluence of both of my passions. So, yes.
I love this. All right.
Thanks for joining us for this insane intro. And we're really excited about the class.
Always my pleasure. I am
so
excited.
Text her and be like, I don't know, Ree. That's all it says, dot, dot, dot.
I know
this was coming.
I've known Hillary a long time. I think we're okay.
Yeah.
But have you seen her with us? Which is a whole other
That's next level.
That's, but I'm
you
sure
haven't seen not Sipa for the, and I together. Yeah. So that's a whole other.
Our fingers
are weird.
Oh, man, I know.
And we went through a lot together with that whole situation.
Yeah.
That we were in.
It was a situation with a capital S.
I mean,
was,
if you study classical music in college, it's several years of situations.
It is just all situation. Just all situation. Like, really, it's like, okay, you know how, so the Catholic Church has, they paid so many people so much money and found all the most brilliant minds to make this absolutely unbelievable music. It's just gorgeous and like can touch your soul. And then also it's the Catholic Church.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was basically it.
I know. All right. Okay. Well, y'all go get your tickets to That Witch Life MiniCon, which is happening this Saturday, April the 6th. You can get them at thatwitchlife.com. And we can't wait to see you there. There's so much. We're going to dig in so deep and get so much from these incredible presenters, including Sipa. And I'm so glad that you are going to be co-leading with Hillary. That's going to be great.
Me too.
It's
I can't wait.
So good.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let us hear from our sponsors. And Sipa, thank you again for coming in.
My pleasure.
Hey, witches! Our beloved kitchen witch, Dawn Hunt of Kachina Aurora, is back, and she has all kinds of new delicious magic, and we are here for it.
My husband turns 50 this year, and if I gave him a case of Kachina Aurora's magical marinara as a milestone birthday present, he would not complain, especially now that Kachina Aurora has magical marinara sauces, roasted garlic pomodoro, and sweet basil pomodoro.
Yes, those are so incredible. And with months of cold, rainy weather still ahead of us, I'm all about warm, tasty, super easy meals to make, which is why I absolutely love Kachina Aurora's risottos. Just listen to these flavors. Garlic and Italian herb, hearty mushroom, garden vegetable. They're delicious and super simple to make and perfect for a cozy winter meal.
Not to mention the coffees. She has whole bean moon coffees. The full moon is a light roast. The half moon is a medium roast. And the dark moon is a dark roast. It is all amazing and exactly what you need to start your day.
We have so many coffee witches that are so hooked on these blends. I mean, they're just, not only do they have these wonderful names and qualities, they're legitimately delicious coffees, but literally everything Kachina Aurora makes is incredible. And if you haven't gotten it yet, you have to check out A Kitchen Witch's Guide to Recipes of Love and Romance and Kitchen Witchcraft for Beginners, spells, recipes, and rituals to bring your own practice into the kitchen. The recipes are glorious and they're really easy to make and they are so magical.
Whether you want to try the famous infused olive oil, the scrumptious risotto, or literally anything Dawn creates, go to KachinaAurora.com ASAP and use code WITCHLIFE to get 10% off. That's code WITCHLIFE.
Thank you to Kachina Aurora for being an episode sponsor.
We cannot tell you how many witches have gotten hooked on jasmine pearl tea.
Well, it's friggin' delicious.
And you Jasmine Pearl fans, they have a whole array of absolutely phenomenal winter teas to keep you warm and comforted through these next few cold and miserable months.
Like their Golden Fire Tea, every sip of that tea is an adventure. The turmeric brings warmth and grounding that combines with a zesty kick of ginger and cayenne to create a glow of flavors that dance on your tongue. More than just the taste, Golden Fire heals you from within. It's perfect for those wintry days when you need a bit of warmth, and you can even try it as a latte.
And let's talk wellness. This tea isn't just a delight to the senses, it's a guardian for your well-being, especially during cold and flu season. It feels like a nurturing shield, fortifying and protecting.
A tea that has become a personal favorite of mine, especially during these challenging times, is the Well-Being Blend. It's not just any tea. It's like a comforting friend, offering support when you need it most. Imagine a blend of elderberries, echinacea, red clover, and rose hips. Each sip feels like it's boosting your immune system. Perfect for those days when you feel a bit off or have been around others or under the weather yourself. And the peppermint in this tea, it's incredibly refreshing, especially if you're feeling stuffed up.
Hold on, let me bring you a sip of serenity. A moment of tranquility, will we? Courtesy of Jasmine Pearl's exquisite Tranquility Green Tea. Close your eyes and envision lush Chinese tea gardens where each leaf whispers the secrets of centuries-old traditions. This isn't just a tea. It's an invitation to embark on a journey of peace and harmony. Breathe in the essence of this carefully cultivated leaf. A sip can take you on a sensory journey that transports you to a place of calm, where time slows down and every moment is savored. Disclaimer, Tranquility Green Tea experiences may include a heightened sense of inner calm, a peaceful disposition, and a newfound appreciation for the artistry of Chinese green tea.
Supporting small businesses are very important to us, and the Jasmine Pearl is a family-owned tea importer and specialty tea blender, which is based in Portland, Oregon, and they have been crafting tea blends for 17 years and direct sourcing teas from origin since 2004. Their blending and sourcing philosophy is based in the love of fine teas and herbs, which is why they focus on blending with exceptional ingredients, hand blending each batch using mainly organic ingredients, and wow, does it show.
Check out these phenomenal teas at thejasminepearl.com. Save 10% with the new coupon code WITCH2024. That's WITCH2024. Free shipping on orders over $35. Make sure you let them know you heard about them on That Witch Life podcast. And thank you to Jasmine Pearl for being an episode sponsor. Okay, so we are back with a very, very special guest. We are just delighted to have her. I've been really looking forward to this interview. Maria Menes, who is a Black, Jewish, and queer tarot reader of over 20 years, who teaches people about blending their spirituality with magic, liberation work, and eroticism in their everyday lives. She believes that the end result of all magic should be to cultivate a more equitable and empathetic planet. Her highly praised anti-racism tarot workbook, Tarot for the Hard Work, is available online and in stores. Maria, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
And you told us something just before we came on the show. Are you willing to admit publicly what you told us privately?
That I'm a huge fan of your show?
That she, well, I was gonna, that you listened to our podcast, and yet you were still willing to come on.
I'm very picky about my podcast, like, and I get tired of like the same, I'm particularly picky about witchy podcasts. So I, when you guys reached out to me, I was like, absolutely, no questions asked. I'm here.
Oh, yay. Yay. Well, this makes me happy because we're just always convinced that if people have heard us, they're like, I'll listen to them. I'm not going near that show. So we have to like trick people into coming onto the show.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Well, okay, Maria, so you've heard the show, so you know what's coming first. The first question is, how did you know you were a witch or a magical person?
I think it started when I was a child. I was a very odd child. And I remember being able to have these sort of psychic visions and to see them like follow through and just notice these odd synchronicities and how in tune with my inner self that I was. I didn't know until many years later that I would describe that as quote unquote being a witch. But looking back, I've been a witch most of my life.
Yeah. 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 Just like talking to the moon, talking to animals, collecting rocks, talking to rocks, talking all that kind of stuff.
So many rocks, so many moon conversations.
Well, also, you know, you've like you mentioned, you've written this really important book that we actually included it in our Patreon subscription boxes. At our top tier, people get a quarterly box of magical goodness, and they always get a book. Yes, and this is the book that we included this time, along with Pamela Chen's Tarot of the Owls. So people could, you know, use, it's like, you can't give somebody a tarot book and not also include a tarot deck. I mean, let's just be reasonable here. And so I was like, oh, and we also need to include owls in this as well. And Pamela is just lovely. But, you know, a lot of people talk about how their early witchcraft journeys and their early tarot journeys go hand in hand. What was that like for you? How did you find your way into tarot?
Yes, I was gifted a deck, the Heindel deck, which looking back, I'm like, wow, to start off with kind of a complicated deck was really interesting. But I was in middle school and I did not have like the little white book that comes with the tarot, with a lot of tarot decks. And so I just kind of made up my own meanings for the cards based off of my, based off of what I saw in the imagery and how I saw these themes show up in my life. And, you know, and I knew that there was some sort of like collective meaning to the cards, but I was like, I don't know where to get started and this is working for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm, most of all, having fun doing it.
Yes.
So, yeah. I was like, I'm having more fun doing this intuitively than I have energy for diving into, you know, rigorous study and so on and so forth. Because once I get started studying something, I just go really deep. And yes. I have been that way my whole life. And eventually I came to get to know the collective meanings of the cards, which I always say is important. Yes, you know, convene with your intuition. But also I think there's something special to be said about these collective energies around these cards that have been cultivated through time as people change and as our world changes. And so it's really nice to be able to tap into the within and the without while you're sitting in front of a tarot spread.
See that how one of the things that I've often said about like needing, because you're right, sometimes people really choose this binary when it comes to how to learn a specific tool, especially like with tarot. And it's either you need to memorize the meanings in the book, or you need to throw the book out and you just need to go intuitively. And I've found in my tarot journey that it's like approaching a language. If you just memorize the meanings in the book, it's like learning a language by memorizing their dictionary. Okay, so you're going to know the meanings of the words, but you're going to miss out on all the context, the slang, probably a lot of the proper pronunciation. And at the same time, there are people who are just going to dive in not many. It's a rarity, but are going to learn a language just by being around the people. And that is, but never having any sort of formal instruction on the language itself, like not going to take classes on it or anything like that. So you will learn context and slang, but only from one specific kind of pocket, because language is so different everywhere you go. And so you're missing a lot of the texture of the language, because maybe, you know, and so, I mean, and so I feel like the best way to learn a language would be the formal study and the actual practice with native speakers. And so then Absolutely. You have, you know, and so that's where I feel like that's the same way I want people to approach tarot is, you know, yeah, do some of the formal study so that you have a sense of the texture and the richness to it. And then also, you know, like dive in. And if your intuition is the native speaker, you need to also be there with them as well. And I do the same thing. Like I read intuitively for people, but when I do my own readings, I go straight to Rachel Pollack and I get her insight on my reading. Cause to me, that is the most classic, like, you know, I forget Arthur Waite. I want to hear from Rachel. what's the texture here? That's my book learning. So anyway, I kind of went on a tangent there.
No, I love it. And I think that you stated that so beautifully, because we have to remember that we are part of this giant interconnected web, and we are so influenced by our surroundings and our connections to other people, places, and things and energies. And why not reach out and understand the wisdom that other people have, you know, conjured around these cards, the symbolism that they see, and so on and so forth. And why not add that richness to your practice? Because it can't just be all about you, right? Like you, when you go into a tarot spread, you want a full picture of the response to your inquiry. And if you are just seeing things from one perspective, that kind of limits your ability to deliver to yourself or to other people a full tarot reading. And I just think that's sort of a disservice to yourself, because the beauty of tarot is its depth. And I will scream it from the mountaintops. So yes, we're on the same page here.
I love that.
I love that so much.
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, congratulations on Tarot for the Hard Work. It's such an important work. And so I want to know if you were willing to share what originally inspired you to write this book.
I have spent most of my life in Western Virginia. I currently live in LA, but I was there during the time, you know, 2016 and the sort of rising boldness of certain people, certain voices, certain stances.
Nasty racist fuckers is the actual term we use on this show. So yeah.
Yeah. Nasty racist fuckers. I lived in a place where, you know, every single day you would see the Confederate flag, you know, on people's cars and flying in front of people's houses. And I was like, oh my fucking God, like, what can I do? Like, I don't know how to respond to this. And I am so grateful that when I looked for resources and groups and communities to sort of subvert their strategies and tactics, I am grateful that a lot of those groups were geared toward white people, because those are the people who need to do the work the most, yeah, right?
100%.
Absolutely.
Right. And that's great. But also, I was like, that's not my place. You know, I'm a Black woman, and I see things from a different level of light, shadow, urgency. And so I was like, you know what? I can't find a group in my community to like do this work with me. Why don't I just sort of figure out my way to approach racial injustice. And so I am a very organized person. I like spreadsheets. I like structure. And when I was thinking about like, how do I create a structure where I can grow as an activist? And my first thought was like, tarot, because that's what I use to grow in my personal life. Why not let it help me shape how I show up in the public sphere? And so I wrote down in a, you know, little notebook, you know, the Fool, I could do X, X, and X. Or the Hierophant, I could learn about, you know, traditions and how to, you know, approach them and subvert them, etc. And by the end of my work, I had, you know, this notebook of ideas that I went out into the world and practiced, and I felt comfortable doing this work because it wasn't just me thinking of myself going out in the world, because that seemed a little bit overwhelming, but I could see myself dressed as the Chariot, for example, out in the world. And that made me feel like so empowered because I knew these cards, I knew how they could serve me, I knew how I could use those themes to serve the outer world, and I didn't feel so by myself and scared because I was like, you know what, like, I know how the Chariot would react in this situation. That's what I'm going to do. So that turned into a blog, and eventually it came, you know, ended up as this book. And I'm so happy that it's out there. I'm proud of it. I think it's my biggest spell for the world. And I'm so, so happy it's out there.
You know, I'll tell you one of the things that I appreciate so much about your book, and it actually relates to a conversation we had in our intro before you came and joined us, Maria, is that we had Coach Sipa Swan on, who was talking about, you know, when she would go into auditions, that people really wanted her to succeed, and that that really helped her take more risks and come in with more confidence. And when I was reading your book, I felt like, as a white person, that you wanted me to succeed as an anti-racist co-conspirator. Like, you, so I want people to, when they come into this, that they're like, this person is giving me graciously the tools because she wants me to do well, you know? And I think that's where a lot of well-meaning white folks, they stop short of taking risks and doing the work because they don't want to get it wrong, which is its own form of white supremacy. I could go down that rabbit hole of white people having to do it.
I literally just choked because I was about to say the same thing. I'm like, that is white supremacy.
White people have to be right. I'm like, that's also white supremacy. Different topic, different date. Okay. but that's where they stop. They're like, well, I'm scared I'm going to do it wrong. It's like, well, you will do it wrong. Okay. And then you learn and you say, thank you so much for teaching me. And then you get better. It's step by step. And so that's like the tone and the approach, that you bring people in where you're like, yeah, you can do this. And it's going to be hard and it's going to hurt. And I'm so glad you're here. And I'm like, this is great.
Thank you. That was really my intention in writing my book, just in my natural voice, because I don't talk at people. I want to talk with people, but a book is like sort of a one-sided experience. So I thought, how can I write this in order for people to feel like I'm here with them doing the work? Because I am. I'm a Black woman raised in America. I've got my own internalized racism and other isms that I have to work through. I'm right there with you. And I'm not here to tell you how to be right and how to be wrong. This is a learning journey. And that's okay. That's great. You are going to fuck up sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
This work is more important than your ego.
Yes. Period. Thank you. Yes. Yes.
That, and it is more, all day. Yes.
Well, more important than your hurt feelings. Your hurt feelings do not equal oppression.
Karen.
Karen specifically, yes.
Karen specifically out there, all right? White people. So, but on that note, you've touched on this some, but I was, you know, we could unpack it further about like who specifically you're hoping will read this book, and what do you hope that they'll get from it? I mean, I think of just a variety of people. I think of the, I'm not going to say his name, but somebody I used to know who's just like down the racist QAnon rabbit hole, never to be seen again. And I don't talk to this person anymore. Unfortunately, that's where he took his perspective in life. But that's, you know, yeah, okay, it'd be great if that person could get something from it. But there's also people who are, you know, trying to do the good work, you know, but it's like, is there a specific person out there you're like, if I could just get this book into the hands of one person, you know, who is that person? You don't have to use names, or just describe them to us.
Right. You know, I wrote this book for white people, for people of color, for people who are into tarot, people who don't give a fuck about tarot, people who consider themselves activists, people who, you know, have never signed a petition. Ultimately, this book is for anyone who has ever asked the question, well, where do I start?
Yeah.
And that's why this is a workbook more than, you know, just, you know, a straight nonfiction, you know, prose book. It's my intention that people can use this workbook in order to personalize their own journey to how they want to show up in the world and how they can show up uniquely. I think there are so many, and I think there are a lot of great things about social media, and I think there are a lot of negatives. And mm-hmm. one of the negatives, I think, is this sort of narrative of you're not an activist unless you do this, or
yeah, if you don't do it this one way, it's not, yep. it, you're not. And I'm like, that limit is pretty limiting.
Right. Right. It's like, maybe you're not the type of person to post about a topic every single day on your Instagram stories. That doesn't mean you don't care. It's just, you show up in different ways. And mm-hmm. so my intention with this book is for anyone reading it to be able to feel like they're not trying to fit a mold. They are showing up as they are, and they're willing to do the work. And those are the prerequisites. Show up as you are and be willing to do the work.
That's so, show up as you are and be willing to do the work. Like, listen, I just wish I could get that. I'm so thankful you said that. And I just wish more and more people would hear that. Just, you know, show up where you are and be willing to do the work.
Yeah, you don't have to have all the right answers. And it's also like, and this is true in learning anything, whether it be, you know, hard truths about yourself, whether it be the tarot, whether it be learning about what's going on in the world and understanding it more, or learning about other people's experiences. Like, you're not going to walk in to any one of those things and know everything. Like, you're just not. I mean, like, this is impossible. And, you know, it's like, show up and be willing to learn, be willing to do what you need to do to get to where you need to be. And especially in this way, be willing to like get it, you know, get it wrong and figure it out. Try again, you know, continue to learn. It's a continual growth process.
And also go back to what you said about social media and that you don't have to show up in a specific way. I mean, especially during the pandemic, especially during the 2020 and the uprisings, I think there was so much of a pressure on us all to show up online in social media settings. And I realized for myself, and not speaking for everybody, but I know for myself, that was actually me being a social media keyboard warrior was actually keeping me from doing the good work. Because at the time, I was working at a social justice focused institution where I'd be in meetings where we're talking about ways to support the movement. And I would be in my head thinking about how I was going to respond to the 300 comments on my last Facebook post. And I realized, is this really where my skills are best served? Like, on Facebook, or actually being in the room with activists working on this? And it was an ego check for me
to step off of social media. Cause like, well, what if people won't know I'm doing the work. And then I had to check that, like, oh, do I need people to know I'm doing the work? Is that the, and so I was like, oh, that was an ouch moment that I found myself in. And I was like, people are probably going to say Courtney doesn't care anymore. And I'll be really sad to hear that. And then I have to get back in because this is actually where work is happening and not just arguing with somebody I went to high school with.
Exactly. There are so many roles to be had in the movement toward equity. And, you know, there's a place for keyboard warriors yes. who have the time and energy to do that. I'm not one of them. I yes. speak out about things, you know, here and there, and I'm not shy about sharing my opinions on things, but I can show up better in other ways. I can show up more effectively in other ways. And that's what works for me. And I think that's a big takeaway I want people to have is like, there's no right way to do this because you're always going to mess up. You're always going to have to, you know, pick yourself up and get started again. And that's okay. When I say show up as you are, don't show up as I'm trying to be my ideal image of an activist. Show up honestly and truthfully as you are and be willing to do the work and find that conviction in you. I hope that people read this book and find conviction in any sort of topic. For example, I show in the book, I present different ways to combat racism in your local communities. And an example might be a teacher can use their skills to promote equity in the classroom. And that might be how they can best serve with the privilege that they have to have, you know, that audience and the ability to shape minds. That might not be what is right for somebody else. That's okay. That's great. It will take many, many roads to liberation. There's no one straight, direct road to freedom. And that's just the truth. And the sooner you accept that, the quicker that you can show up.
I have another question for you that's you being a tarot artist. And a lot of folks, tarot deck creators and tarot book writers, talk about the experience of living through the tarot as they're creating their tarot work. Is that something that you experienced? Did you find yourself living out the quote unquote fool's journey? Or how did the tarot show up for you in your life as you were working on this book?
I had so many potent downloads while writing this book, and so many of them were very uncomfortable for me. Oh. I think that I wrote about something in every single chapter for every card in the Major Arcana about something that was hard for me to accept or take on or admit about myself. And maybe me writing the book, I wasn't living out the tarot in the real world as much as doing a lot of the internal work. And I think, yes, the main deliverable was this book, but as sort of like a latent win, I was able to really evolve my understanding of myself, not just as an activist, but as a person, and understand how I show up for myself and in my relationships and in my community. And that starts internally. And so I just had to face uncomfortable truths about feelings and experiences that I've had and perspectives and biases I might have. And I'm working to confront them because I admit that I am imperfect and I'm willing to do the work. The fact that I'm Black doesn't mean that I'm absolved of helping other people get free. There are many intersections, and I want to be involved in helping other people get free, not just in not necessarily in a way that's like directive or top down, but like I am a partner in this work with anyone who reads this book.
And that comes through. It really does.
Thank you.
It's in a really, really, really powerful way. Now, if you're willing to share, of all the hard work you did in this book, what work have you found was the hardest, or did you find was the hardest?
I think the hardest part was confronting how much privilege I have. I have stable housing. I have financial security. I have a few degrees, and I have a lot of connections in my network. And it's not that I perceived myself as a victim, but it just really made me remember that I may, be Black, but there are so many ways that I can help my people and other people of color with what I have. And it really takes sort of a loss of, I feel like you have to lose privilege in some way in order to redistribute that to other people. And so accepting the fact that I do have considerable privilege and recognizing that I need to better use these resources that I have, and that might mean I lose convenience, I might lose money, I might lose some of my free time. I don't want to do those things, but I am compelled to, because liberation tops all of my priorities in life, not just my personal liberation, but the liberation of others.
It is such a, I think when I once heard somebody describe the process of intersectionality is that it's like stopping at a four-way stop. You got to see where everybody's coming from before you proceed. And again, it's another legacy of white supremacy that white people think they're the only ones that are having to do the unpacking of the privilege. And I had that conversation with some very well-meaning white people that we were working together to serve meals to the homeless. And one lady was complaining because she didn't like that the Unitarian Church, I guess it's okay to go ahead and share the story. The Unitarian Church for a while was trying to use this messaging that said, stand on the side of love, which sounds nice, right? Well, there were people who were in wheelchairs that were like, we don't like that because we can't stand, And so then this woman,
that's super ableist. So
and this woman was just frustrated with that. She's like, well, what else are we supposed to do? And so I sat and was talking with her about it. And the more I talk with her, the more I realized she was erroneously thinking that she was part of the quote unquote group that had to always think about other people. And I had to stop her and say, listen, I just came out of some work that I was supporting a group of Black women who were doing their own intersectional work. You had straight Black women. Some of them had high educational privilege. You had very poor Black trans women, some of whom then had educational privilege. Then you had some queer Black women who had financial privilege, but they didn't have educational privilege. And,
disabled Black women,
everybody was sitting and working together to figure out, listen to where the other ones were coming from. And I could tell in her face that she had never considered that a group of Black women were getting together to work on their privilege. And I was like, now in our next lesson, friend, the fact that you didn't think about that is its own form of white supremacy. It's its own problem. However, I'm glad that we finished lesson one today. So tomorrow, when we get back to lesson two, recognize that you are not the only one who quote unquote has to do this work. We all have to do this work, and we all need to do this work. And honestly, deep down, we all want to do this work.
Right.
And that's where it's like, step back. The more you step back with it, and this is another whole story that was with my dad. I got my nephew a t-shirt that said feminist on it. And my dad was like, oh my God. And in his mind, he was still in this thing of like, feminists mean that they hate men and that I'm going to get excluded and that I have to do all this, that. And I said, hey, Dad, do you think that women should be paid equal to men? Because he has two daughters. And he's like, well, of course. I said, there, you're a feminist. Mm-hmm. And it's like, because deep down he does want the same things that feminists want, but he's in that whole setup. Why do I have to be that? Oh, wait, actually, no, I do want this.
Yes. Yes. I totally agree.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, I'm just, gosh, there's so many things I could just, what was the part that you found most beautiful about writing this book that maybe that even, you know, a lot of times when we do our projects, there's one part that we talk about, it still makes us cry. What was the part that you found was most beautiful?
I had a really difficult time writing the final chapter about the world. I had so many topics that I could write about, and I actually sent the manuscript to my editor and was like, the world card is going to be late. I don't know what to do with this card. And I was just sitting in my office and I was so freaking tired, just, you know, all-nighters and lots of downloads and lots of processing. And I'm writing, but I'm also doing a lot of internal processing. And I was just like, I'm freaking tired. I need a break. And there it was. I was just like, of course, how do I write this book without talking about taking care of ourselves? Mm. And for me, that was the most beautiful chapter to write. It's short, it's succinct, it's, I think, some of my most heartfelt writing in the book. And, you know, I back up my urging to for readers to rest and take care of themselves and recuperate and not burn out. I just thought, how can I write this book without that piece? And I feel like that final chapter is sort of like, it's an intense book. I think there's a lot of topics covered. There's a lot of, you know, there are hundreds of activities you could do from the book. But at the very end of the day, you have to take care of yourself or else you can't show up for other people. The movement does not benefit from you burning out. And when we burn out, we, you know, deprioritize things that might otherwise be very important to us, or we forget about the work that we were doing because we rest, or we burn out, we give up, and we find other priorities to fill that time and energy with. And just closing the book on the note of that rest is essential to liberation felt like a graceful way to end the book, to offer, I mean, graceful in its literal sense, as in, you know, offering grace to the readers that, yeah, we've been on this wild major arcana ride. You're probably tired. That's okay. Take a break, rest up, but don't give up.
Oh God. I love that. I feel like that's like, that's
everything.
That's the sweet, it's like the chocolate covered almond that you get on the coffee. Like it's the perfect deliciousness. It's like, oh, yes. Yeah. It's just like, yes. That one little element.
And it's something that I don't think we talk about nearly enough, you know, that like the element, I think we, I mean, and like, as it, like, I think that we often like think that, I forget that like part of showing up is also showing up for us, for ourselves as well. Like if we don't eat, you know, like if we're like forgoing food because we're like, oh, I don't have time, I'm just going to grab a granola bar because I have to do this thing, and we're not sleeping and we're, you know, and we're not taking care of ourselves, like how the fuck are we going to show up for anything or anyone effectively? And if we pressure others to do that, we also, like, first, not everyone can operate at the same speed. Not everyone can operate at the same, you know, with the same, in the same, you know, standards or functions, because like some people have more physical needs than others. Some people have more mental needs than others. And it's like, we have to show up for what I think in any work we're doing, it's so important that we understand ourselves and what we uniquely need so that we can best care for ourselves. So we can continue to support ourselves and show up for others and also model to others how important it is to take care of ourselves, because mm-hmm. everybody's gaslighting everyone about how we should take care of. I mean, like, we're literally not, we're not, we do ourselves no service when we don't encourage ourselves and others to take care of each other. If we say you should have all this energy and show up but neglect yourself, that doesn't help anyone get anywhere. And that also doesn't, I think it's also not true. We do have to take care of ourselves. That's how we balance everything out. And I think modeling that for other people is critical, because they also, even the people that you are advocating for, they also deserve to see a model of someone who is taking care of themselves, because it is, I mean, that's so critical for like every form of activity that we do in our life, from the basic day to days to the heavy lifting work that you do.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I know the feeling of being in the moment and wanting to do all I can and just being like, just a little bit more, just a little bit more. But I love what you said about modeling rest for other people, because we might not easily access that self-compassion that in so many ways society has tried to quell within us.
Has told us don't listen to that voice. Yeah, 100%.
Right. And like, if you can't access that for yourself, you can think about other people, other people that you know even, and think, would I want them to rest? Of course mm-hmm. I would. Would I want them to take care of themselves? Of course I would. Would they want me to take care of myself? Of course I would. Is that the responsible thing to do? Yes, because mm-hmm. I want to see other people not burn out. Thus, if I don't do this for myself, I can at least do it for other people and model the necessity and the benefits of rest in such a way that enables other people to feel like, okay, I can take a break too. And I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Maria, thank you so much. It's just we have a lot of great guests, and then we have our life-changing guests. And so definitely I know we're into the life-changing category.
this is a really, really, really beautiful interview.
So what, Ed, Kanani, your mom still has an extra copy, so you can go get it from her.
And it's mine as of Saturday.
And scene, taking that. All right. Well, Maria, though, what can you share with us, what is coming up next for you?
Yes. Coming up next, I am building a long-term program called Lunar Liberation Society.
Oh my God.
It's in the works. It's going to be rolling out pretty slowly in the fall, but I'm deep in the whole designing, the curriculum. It's going to be about liberation and also personal responsibility, social responsibility, how to check in with like your nervous system, how to connect and make friends as an adult. It's all sorts of things pushed into one. And the ultimate goal is community, to be able to give people the tools and to co-create tools for people to develop community, both within the container of the group and in the outside world. So there's that. Otherwise, I'm doing a few workshops here and there. You can learn all about those things on my website, mariaminis.com, or on Instagram at feminist, FEMINNIS, because my last name.
I love it.
This is going to be, I'm gearing up to offer an online classroom as well, full of online classes about magic, tarot, liberation work, and beyond. So there's a lot of cool stuff coming up this year, and I invite anyone listening to join me. Everyone who cares is invited.
That is marvelous. Well, we just can't be. We're so thankful that you came to stay with us, to talk with us. And
I know now you're like you. You're like, wait, what did I just sign up for?
We need to not be creepy. Oh my God, what's wrong with us?
Be careful, you're going to have to stay with us.
But okay, so people can find you online at what's your, what, could you say your website again?
MariaMenace.com.
Easy peasy, Maria Menace. And then your handles are Feminist, which I think is just awesome.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Well, y'all follow Maria, get a copy of that book. We just are so thankful that you came to chat with us today. And the rest of y'all get out there and continue to do the hard work, because, you know, ultimately that's what we all want to have to happen. And we'll see everybody next week. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to That Witch Life podcast. Our music is by Dustin Schultz, editing by Corey Drake. If you like what we do, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee or check out our merch on our Etsy store, or join us on Patreon for bonus content, ad-free episodes, or to join our witch squad. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For show notes, audio transcript, or to ask us a question to answer on a future episode, go to thatwitchlife.com. Until then, keep moving that shit. We will talk to you next week.
So mote it be.